This episode is brought to you by Podomatic, the easiest way for podcast fans to become podcasters. Go to podomatic.com or search Podomatic in your app store to start your own podcast for free and find your audience. Hello and welcome to episode number 353 of the Super Horror Bros podcast. I'm your host Matt, and joining me as always is my brother Mike.
Hello.
How's it going?
Pretty good, pretty good.
We are back to discuss the excellent return, so far at least, of Black Mirror on Netflix. After a long hiatus, as we discussed last week, it's great to be back. So yeah, this is part two of our coverage. Obviously, we already covered the first two episodes last week, so make sure you check that out. But obviously, there's no sort of continuation here, this being a fantastic anthology show, as it were. And yeah, there's no news this week, funny enough, which is, which is perfect timing.
Because we have three meaty episodes to discuss.
Yeah. Good news. These are all like, I mean, two of these are movie length, with one of them being a shorter one, a sort of 40-minute one. So yeah, this is already a lot to discuss, let alone the content here, which is very meaty and very horror-focused as well, which I think is worth mentioning right off the bat. We already had Lock Henry last week, but then all three of these, I think, especially the last two, have such a strong horror focus. It's kind of mad the direction that the season has gone. But yeah, let's just dive right in. So episode three of this season, Beyond the Sea. Obviously, we teased it last week, but I think this was one that we were both very excited for when we sort of did that brief look over the synopsises a few weeks back. That's kind of set in 1969, an alternate history, as it were, 1969. And yeah, it was. I guess one thing right off the bat was that with the title and the setting, or at least the year, we both kind of thought whether this would have Bioshocky vibes. And I guess other than maybe I would say the soundtrack, it does. To me, it didn't, because it goes in very different directions, doesn't it? It ends up being a more traditional, actually. I would say the most traditional episode. Obviously, as we get into plot in a sec, but like it does deal with the putting your consciousness in a different form. We discussed
that last week. Yeah, very true. Yeah, this was like the Black Mirror episode of this season, wasn't it? Like, oh yeah, no, I still can't help myself with this shit.
Yeah, we spoke about Charlie saying how he wanted to break away from that, and I think he absolutely has, and obviously we'll get to that more when we discuss the season as a whole. But this is the one that followed the formula, definitely. But like I say, it's a formula that is you could have the entire show about that and it absolutely wouldn't feel old, because this is still so different.
Yeah, this feels completely fresh to any other, like, you know, put your consciousness in something thing. And yeah, you know, it really doesn't matter if you've got a great story to tell.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, what is the story?
Yeah, so basically, we've got two kind of really...
I just quickly say as well, obviously, with our TV specials, full spoilers from the start, so make sure you've seen all of these episodes, because yeah, we don't skirt around here, we're just going to dive straight in, like, the knowledge that we've all seen these. So yeah, full spoiler alert.
Definitely. So yeah, Beyond the Sea has kind of two kind of pretty awesome kind of leads in this. We have Aaron Paul and we have Josh Harnett, and they are both kind of, I was just trying to remember, we see them initially kind of living their lives, don't we? With their family, and like, it's a little bit kind of uncanny valley, because you're kind of like, something feels a little bit off, but you're not sure what. And in particular, I remember, like, Aaron Paul's character, Cliff, he sits down for dinner with his family, and they've all got food, and he hasn't. And right. I was like, what's going on here? I was like, why's he got no food? And then we kind of cut to them kind of going to sleep, and they wake up in a spaceship. And basically, the plot of this, it's in a kind of alternative 1969, where these two astronauts are on a kind of multi-year space mission, And in order to kind of help them, you know, stay sane and kind of, you know, keep motivated for the mission, there's this tech that's been designed where there's a, what do they call it? And it's not like a synthetic being of themselves.
Replicas.
Replica, yeah, has been made of them, and they can transport their consciousness back down to Earth and control this replica that will then, they can then have, you know, live their lives and kind of, you know, the space mission that they're on seems like they don't have to dip into it that often. It's almost like they, you know, need to do a weekly kind of check-in and maintenance and have to just make sure they're on call if there's any sort of issue that they have to quickly kind of zap back up to the spacecraft and kind of fix. It's a really, you know, as I'm describing it, I'm like, man, this sounds confusing. Do you know what I mean? Mm. But like, as soon as you watch it, the episode, it makes perfect sense straight away. And kind of, yeah, we meet kind of Cliff and David, like I said, in their minimal interactions on the spaceship. I'd say that they're not like, they're not really close, are they? They just kind of, no, they do their chores. They have very brief conversation, especially Cliff. Cliff is a very kind of closed book.
Yeah.
And then they get back into their pods and kind of zap their consciousness back down to Earth and kind of live their lives. And even that kind of, Cliff is very subdued and kind of, he's living out in the sticks with his wife and son, and he's very strict with his son and very vacant with his wife. Whereas kind of David is kind of, you know, way more kind of, just seems way more happy and is kind of, you know, going out socially and going to the cinema and stuff. And, you know, just kind of seems like he's having a better time and kind of, I guess, what, 20 minutes or so into this, once the kind of setup, maybe even sooner.
Like, yeah.
Pretty early in the episode, kind of the thing that kind of flips everything on its head is when one Rory Culkin appears, and I was like, well, this is going to go bad then. Like, you know, as soon as you see Rory, you're like, well, people are going to get murdered in horrific ways.
Yes.
And basically, he is some sort of activist that's anti kind of these replicas and kind of basically takes David and his family hostage and makes David watch as his family gets murdered brutally in front of him, and then they destroy his replica. So he is now trapped in the space station, no way of getting back to Earth in the full knowledge that his family have just been murdered. I mean, you got to take a breath really after that, haven't you?
Yeah, like it's already, I remember, I think I did almost pause it at this point and being like, yeah, wow, because not only have they set up so much with, like you say, these two astronauts, their mission, how different they are, how different they approach their mission, and also how different they both approach using the replica, which becomes so pivotal. But then this, where it's, I really love the concept of like, oh, this would be fascinating for astronauts and people that have to be away for a long time to kind of have this, you know, light version of your life, as it were, and still have these connections, and you can kind of push it as far as you want to push it. Obviously, with David being a lot more intimate with his wife and basically seeing it as just himself, and probably doing all the things that he would normally do on Earth, like you say, going to the cinema and stuff. Whereas Cliff is basically using it as just like a great communication tool with his family, where even early on, you realize that there's no touching whatsoever, which is so important later on as well. But like, he doesn't even put an arm around his wife or touch his son. You know, he's just there to communicate almost orders with them and keep them like in check. Yeah, exactly. It's just like, oh, this is a great video, you know, tool device, but he's not using it for anything beyond that. So straight away, it's like, oh, this is amazing. This is already so interesting and can go so many different ways. But then for them to immediately throw it on its head in such a crazy way, like, say, I did not expect this scene, certainly not this early, in like the first 15 minutes of this long, you know, 80 minute episode or, you know, mini film, basically, because I basically want to treat this like a film because it is one. It was one thing when I was watching it, when I was more in the meat of the episode and stuff, I was like, this should be in the cinema. Like, this is so good and so creative.
Yeah.
But yeah, just get, so then getting to like, oh wow, this is what's happened. And obviously that scene was amazing. It was so tense, so scary. I think it was probably the scene of the season overall. And it's a shame that Rory wasn't in it more. But he left such an impact. Yeah. And like, it's crazy that I'd obviously only just watched Lords of Chaos like 2 weeks ago. It must have been in my brain that I knew he was in the season, but I'd forgot because, yeah, that timing was wild to me. So to see him again, and obviously he was amazing in Scream 4, and he's so good in this. I just wish he was in more stuff, especially genre stuff. But it was crazy. Like, the way it was so visceral. And again, it's like, wow, what would you do? There's already the element of how insane that is to go through. Yeah. You know, you experienced basically dying as well as being killed with your family. But then you have the knowledge of, well, my family is now gone. You know, my life that I left behind is no more. Then you've still got 4 years to do on this 6-year mission.
Yeah. Then you're, and now you're completely on your own.
Yeah, you're just stuck there now. And so immediately I'm like, where is this going? Because you're already going to have like the suicidal element, the kind of just giving up. You know, they make it very clear that this is a 2-man mission.
Yeah.
And the mission doesn't work without the two of them, which was, it's the second they kind of throw that out early, I'm like, oh, this is so good. Because like, immediately you know that things aren't going to obviously go to plan. But I guess, yeah, not even going further than that. Like, what were your thoughts just at this point, up until the actual the killing of his family?
Oh, it blew me away from the get-go, to be honest, and it just kept building, because the initial replica, and like you say, astronauts in this mission and using this replica as a way to kind of keep them sane and keep them kind of motivated was like, I was sold. Like I said, you know, it sounds weird when I was synopsizing it, but when you watch this episode, it makes perfect sense. And then when he, like when he was in the cinema and people were coming up to him and being like, oh, are you, you know, is that your replica? Am I talking to your replica right now, David? And like, you know, and I was like, oh God, people are aware of what's going on. And I was like really interested in that and wondering how they were going to build on that. And then, yeah, then suddenly Rory rocks up and I'm like, oh, okay, they're going to have this scene. Like, somehow David's going to escape and his family. And it's going to, this episode is going to be about kind of these people that are against the replicants and like, you know, going against them and everything else. And, you know, we're going to have that. And then suddenly he just murders the family. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. Now I'm like, yeah, I'm so interested in seeing on kind of, you know, what the effect has, like, is it going to be David versus kind of Cliff, kind of him still having the normal life and David being completely there. And then like the second kind of Cliff kind of goes back to sleep on the spaceship, I'm like, well, David's not going to let that happen. And I thought it was going to slowly be like David trying to get control of his, you know, chip. And like, and I thought there'd be like, I kept thinking to myself, oh, there's going to be multiple times where David has taken the chip, gone down in Cliff's body, and Cliff's wife has no idea. Yeah, just pretended. And I really thought it was going to be that. And then when Cliff, like, I was thinking that constantly. And then suddenly Cliff's like, says to his wife, you know, David's in a real bad way. Like, I've got to help him because, yeah, I can't let him kill himself or just become distracted and not do his end of the bargain, because we have to work together. If we don't work together, I'm not coming home. Like, so we need to be smart about this. And then basically says like, I've got to let David come down in my, you know, use my replicant and, you know, just walk in the woods and just breathe some fresh air and, you know, get a break, because if not, he's going to let us down and I'm going to die up there.
Yeah.
And like instantly when they got that, I was like, man, like, that's even more interesting to what I had in my head. And I was just like, I was enamored by it. And kind of, you know, these first scenes when then we have, you know, Cliff, we have David, but in Aaron Paul's body, and kind of Aaron Paul given this performance now as someone else was just so good. And like, you know, just seeing this relationship and then, yeah, as you touched upon, like, you know, Cliff just has no physical contact. The second David embodies that replicant, that like the wife is embracing with him and you know, trying to soothe him because he's crying and distraught, and she's hugging him and trying to make him feel better. And it's already like that barrier gets broken so quick, and in a way that's natural. You know, it's not, there's nothing untoward about it, but you already are like, well, that barrier that's there between your actual husband and you is already eliminated with David. Mm. And then just seeing how that slowly developed, I just loved it. I love the kind of the angle of him being like, drawing the picture on the spaceship, and then kind of, you know, Cliff being like, wow, that's incredible. Like, if I was back home, I'd hang that on my wall. And like David instantly using that as like, well, you know, I could probably draw you one. Like, it's probably going to take, I'm like, he knocked that up in like 20 minutes. And he's like, that's probably going to take me like 100 hours. Like, but I could do one. Yeah. And I was like, what baller, like trying to negotiate more chip time.
Yeah.
And like, yeah. And I loved it. I loved the backwards and forwards. The soundtrack was fantastic. And just the, you know, I think the two leads can be, you know, they're very good and strong. But I think Cliff's wife, Lana, is incredible in this episode. Mm. Because just the way that she's slowly, you know, it's her husband that she's seeing. Like, but she knows it's not him. But he's given her what she wants more. And it's her husband's body. Do you know what I mean? Mm. It's like, it's such a fucked up scenario. And you can just see that kind of inner conflict in her. And I think it was done so well, because I think it could have easily been that she just got enamored by it and then fell for him. And that was it. And that, it wasn't that. It felt much more real to me, where it was like, she had these feelings, but then she knew that it was wrong and kind of instantly pushed back. And I felt that was a really good way to go with it as well. It would have been very easy for this to just turn into a kind of fucked up love story. And it is a fucked up love story, but with her being kind of along for the ride the whole time.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because once Cliff starts, when David starts inhabiting Cliff's replica, you kind of feel like it's the obvious thing, isn't it? Of like, he's going to start cheating and all this stuff. Whereas, yeah, I think even though it goes down a road that you're expecting, there are so many twists along the way that you aren't. And I do think that, yeah, it is real. It's not portrayed in a fantasy way where, yeah, like she does just kind of, you mentioned the scene, obviously, when he first gets there, which I think is such a pivotal scene. And it's really what ties this entire, you know, film together, is that like him just experiencing this world for the first time and seeing where they live and seeing his family. But then when he does just completely break down and show this level of emotion that we, at least at this point, we didn't even think Cliff was you know, able to show. He does later on in the episode in a really awful and brutal callback at the end, but like at this point he is very shut off. So for her reaction to see that, and then for her to immediately console him with just an arm around, you know, just a perfectly normal thing of someone who has literally just lost everything. And the first thing that Cliff says to her after that first visit is, did you touch him? And this was so good to me, because this was something that like the penny dropped after the episode when I was just thinking about it. And it was something that in the moment I was like, what a strange thing to ask. You know, is he already accusing her of cheating? Like, this is really weird that he would specifically say, why did you touch him? Yeah. And that's because obviously I didn't realize the full capacity of what was happening in this episode with regards to, you know, clearly they'd never touched each other. And so for even just that small thing, like you say, that was the barrier that was broken immediately on his first visit.
Yeah.
And so from there, it is going to lead to a lingering touch on the shoulder, to a dance, you know, to eventually a kiss and stuff like that. So I think it's so well written because it is believable and real, and just like classic brilliant sci-fi, which Black Mirror a lot of the time when it gets it right absolutely is that it throws up these preposterous scenarios like what this is. You know, we're dealing with two astronauts,
astronauts, you know, inhabiting the same replica. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, like on paper it's mental, but what it all boils down to is just real human emotion and dealing with like loneliness and acceptance of grief and all of these different topics. And it's just so interesting on so many different levels.
You know, with the whole non-touching thing, I was really like just it made me think about it so much when I looked at, because like when the episode started and you see David kind of with his wife and you know, like you say, they're very intimate, and you kind of then see Cliff, and I was like, man, why is he so cold? And then, but then I'm like, then I was thinking, like, as the episode was going, I was just thinking about it more, where I was like, that's not you down there. Like, does Cliff see it as a form of cheating? That even if he is inhabiting the replica, that's not physically him. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you know, is that a problem to him? Because it's like, yeah, that's, you know, it is a replica, but it's like, and it's not flesh and blood, as we see from when David gets cut open. But I'm like, yeah, like he has drawn this boundary to say, yeah, this is a machine. Like, I'm not going to use it exactly like it's me. I'm going to be there, but I'm not going to fully be there. Whereas, like I said, in my head at the start, I kind of felt like David had the better approach, because it was like, he is just fully embracing it as himself. But I'm like, you know, who is right? Because, you know, Cliff has just put up these boundaries because he's like, it's not me. Like, it isn't me down there. And you know, it's very clear that it's not him. And I just find that super fascinating.
Yeah, it's in the two different interpretations of the same tech, again, is to me, is classic Black Mirror. Yeah. Like, they present to you the morality option, you know, which is like, if this was real, if you could do replica, it's always if, how would you handle it? And so to see these two people, it's why it's genius of like putting two people, one location. Okay, they're astronauts. They're doing this mission. Mm-hmm. They need each other to survive. But their approach to the same outcome, they both have families. They both clearly doing this just as a job. You know, they both have such different views on the world. And so as that is like a counter to each other, but then obviously the realization of David losing everything and then kind of Cliff trying to understand that, which is almost impossible until it happens to him, which again is such a crazy part. But I did want to say, just with the early stuff, like, I loved the, just as a brief thing, because I know we did touch upon it, like those super early interactions when we don't know what's going on yet, when we haven't even seen the space station. It's funny, the food thing, because that would have been such a good thing to know us, but I didn't even see that. But I think in my mind, I called it perfectly just based upon the two interactions, which was the him with the axe and him just being like, oh, I'm still getting used to the grip, which obviously just kind of immediately says to me that that's not a real human. And then obviously the theater scene that you mentioned, where she's kind of referencing like, oh, it looks so lifelike, and you're kind of immediately like, okay, and so I was already like, oh, okay, they've somehow put their consciousness into these fake bodies. And then when it was revealed, I was like, oh, it was exactly what I thought. But then my brain kept going, where I was like, oh, I wonder if this is like a mission to kind of find a new planet to inhabit because the world has been destroyed. So I kept thinking like, oh, this, what we think is the real world that they're sending themselves to, I bet that's just a simulation, and like their families have already been killed in some catastrophic event. That's what I kept thinking early on.
Right. Oh, I never did. Yeah, that would have been funny.
Yeah, because I just immediately was like, oh, this seems too great. And I know that obviously it didn't go that way, because for his family to kind of be immediately taken from him, that would have been a pretty fucked up simulation to do.
It would have been great if they were like almost like on a saving the planet Earth mission, and that, that everyone had been killed, and the only way for them to kind of go to this new planet, they needed to be more like Adam and Eve instead of Adam and Adam, I guess. But like,
That would have been interesting.
They don't know that it's the end of the world. Hasn't that happened in a Black Mirror episode, though?
I feel like, there's something like that. But this almost would have been too obvious, where, like I say, that would have felt like that's how you indoctrinate these two people, is you wipe their memory so they don't remember the traumatic event which has happened to the Earth, and that they have somehow survived as well. It's like a big problem you have to take care of. But also the year, like it being 1969, there was two things that immediately jumped out to me. Obviously, the main one being the cult scene and it being in LA and them clearly evoking the Manson cult. And also it being 1969, the year of Sharon Tate's murder. So I was already like, oh, is this actually going to be the Manson cult? Like, is this a retelling? You know, is this a Once Upon a Time in Hollywood type thing? And obviously they kind of show them on the news later, and they never mention Manson or anything. So it's like, oh, it's clearly inspired by that, but it's not actually that cult, which I think is the right way to do it. But then also 1969 was the first year that we landed on the moon. So I was already thinking about that a lot, where I was like, oh, they must, like, why else is this set specifically in this year? And I think it was more to do with the Manson thing than the moon landing thing, but I think it was like it's a weird coincidence that those two big things happened in the same year, because in my mind they definitely didn't.
No,
and
you almost
pick it up and be like, yeah, oh, those things both happened in American history in 1969. Like, it's very bizarre.
It's a crazy thing. The country was in those two different ends that, like, arguably, like, you know, one of man's biggest feats, like, you know, and then, you know, at its worst, this kind of horrific cult that was going around doing these heinous things, like, happening in tandem to one another.
Yeah, which again is a fascinating backdrop for the episode, which I think that's all it is that once you get out of the intro, which, and obviously the setup, which is like, his family's been killed, how is he going to deal with that? That's kind of the setup. Then, none of this stuff is really that important. Then it just becomes super just about the emotions of the characters. And I think that's why a lot of the episode lingers in the middle, which I have two minor criticisms, and one I'll get to towards the end. But the one I had was I thought the middle part was a little bit too long. It is so key to everything, and I think that's why I feel harsh even saying it. And I do want to get your take on if you agree or not. But it was just that part. I remember being, the episode goes at such a crazy pace. And when we kept getting the painting scenes over and over again, and granted, stuff is differently happening. We're learning more about the sun. They have the bit where they go to the bookshop and stuff. Like, things are happening.
Yeah, I was going to say, I loved it. I never felt like it overstayed its welcome. I think, you know, it was the, I think in order to, because I think that's where, you know, in those scenes in particular is when Lana started to really stand out.
Yeah.
And the wife, where she was just, you know, you could see the conflict and how she'd leave and just stop and listen to the music and not even turn back. And then, like, the next scene, she's there watching him fucking paint. Mm-hmm. And then, like, and then they're chatting and laughing and then they're dancing and, you know. And yeah, I got really taken away with the love story of it and just this, you know, that side of it. And then the I love the fact that, like, he was recommending these books and stuff. And then like, when he's like, just, I've run out of this random chemical, and I'm like, yeah, fuck off, have you? And then he's like, can we go into town? Like, can I use the car? And I'm like, man, like, at that point, there were just so many things in my head, because then I was like, fuck, he's going to go into the real world then. It's like, is he just going to go after the cult? Like, what's going to happen? Like, how far, like, is he going to... But then he doesn't. Like, he's just...
That's what I thought as well, yeah.
Yeah, but at this point, he's, like, fixed on Lana, like, and he just wants to please her and takes her to this bookshop. And when the lady in the bookshop was, like, saying about his friend and, like, how sad it must be for him and stuff, and you could just see, like, it was, I think it that scene in particular was so underperformed in a beautiful way that I think, like, you know, Aaron Paul could have, like, eyes welled up or overreacted. I think Lana could have done the same and could have really, like, you know, done something over the top, but they were just so subdued and it just all happened within their eyes and then just wanted to get out of there quickly. I just felt like that hit me even more than if he'd just like broke down crying or something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I really like that. So yeah, for me, the episode didn't overstay its welcome. And when the episode ended, I crave for like 5 or 10 minutes more, and we'll get to that.
It's me to the other sort of criticism, I guess, which we'll get to.
But I wanted to ask you a really important question before we get that far. Because it was a question I had, and I think I might have been the only person that has this question, but I need to ask. Do you think the replicas have working penises?
Absolutely.
Do you think?
Yeah.
I don't think they do.
Really? That does go with a theory, with kind of what we saw with David and his family.
Correct, because you see David and his wife and how they, when they start
to... And they reference that at one point.
Did they?
I don't know. Now, in my mind, I feel like someone...
I don't think they just... Because they're like, well, you don't eat, so you don't need to, like, piss and shit. Yeah. Like, well, we made you an action man. Like, I think...
There's a lot of other parts of us that would be quite useless as well, like, in that capacity. Do you know what I mean? Like, why else do we have all of these different parts? Like,
yeah, but that's why... Yeah, but what parts?
Well, I don't know. Like, does he have nipples? Like, that's already a useless part of a man's body. Yeah.
Like I said, that's why I think, because again, for me, that was when I was thinking, like, with, like, seriously, like, jokes aside with that bit, like, with the way Cliff was like, you know, he's like, well, I'm not a fully fledged, like, me, so I'm not going to just half-ass it. Whereas, like, I felt like David was making the best of a bad situation where he's like, yeah, I can't even take my shirt off because you'll see the no nips and then that will ruin it. Whereas, like, but I can still do something.
That's really interesting, actually.
I went down the rabbit hole with it. Yeah. Like
no, that's really interesting. I'd love to know what Charlie's answer to this would be because I
don't think anyone's asked the question.
In my mind.
I bet Charlie has.
Absolutely. In my mind, I think, well, it's a replica. So yeah. I think the easiest thing to do is to replicate everything one for one. Like, so yeah. There's no changes. It's just 100% them. Like, that would be my guess. Because otherwise, what's the point of not doing a part? That just seems like more effort.
Yeah.
And, like, if you're changing parts, couldn't it have been like, oh, can you make me, you know, a foot taller or something? Like, it's just, you're getting into a weird area.
Like I say, it's just, you know, if you make a Ken doll of yourself, you know, you don't need them parts. You just clothe.
It's a replica. It's not a Ken doll.
Well, you know, I'm just saying. But, you know, it's a lot of effort. To put those extra moving parts in.
Well, we need to get Charlie on a call because
because of the way that, like I said, it went more into my mindset of why Cliff had decided to no touching, and David had, like I said, made the best of a bad situation and had, you know, improvised, and I found that fascinating, and then I was like, I need to get off this in my mind, but I can't help myself.
It's super interesting. I can totally see the logic. And now that you've raised the question, I do find it super interesting in this episode. But yeah, for me, I immediately felt like Cliff just viewed it almost not as crazy as the Cole, because they were in one extreme direction where they were like, oh, you know, screw all replicas and literally killing people. But I feel like he was morally in the middle where he was like, I'll do this because it's probably better for my family, but I don't agree with it. And if it was up to him, I imagine he probably never would have done it. Yeah, he would have been like, you know what, I'll see you in 6 years, sort of thing. One thing I found interesting was the whole, like, he moved them to this location, this remote farmhouse. And to me, this would have made more sense had it happened after what happened to David's family. Because to me, it would have been like, oh, they're now targeting us. We need to bring you to a safe location and you need to stay inside. You need to lock your doors. You need to not ever go out and become the recluse that she was. And then the scene involving the bookstore would have had more danger to it because she would have been specifically breaking Cliff's rules. Whereas none of that was true, was it? Because he moved him to the farmhouse before David. Like she says, like, you moved me to this place and just be here on my own. But there wasn't really a reason for it for me.
I feel like exactly what you were saying, though, that Cliff was closer to the cultist than he was David. And I felt like because he was closer to that and because he resented the replica, he knew that that there would be people out there that would as well. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, he had moved them there to protect them. He saw the writing on the wall where David was embracing it and David was going out in public and going to the cinema and shit. Whereas Cliff was like, nah, like, people ain't going to like this shit. I don't like this shit. We're moving somewhere remote and we're going to, you know, we're going to get through this like that. And, it, you know, he'd almost seen it as like he basically created the isolation that he had on the spacecraft, him and his family on Earth in America, you know, and I think he did it for that reason. Yeah. That he saw that writing on the wall. But yeah, like I said, you know, even before we get to like the last few minutes, like just all of these different things, you know, the amount of conversations we've just had, this episode just had so much in it. Like I was in love like throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
And when we get to these final scenes and kind of, you know, Cliff and David kind of confront each other and then kind of there's this convenient, accident that happens where Cliff suddenly has to what is David's role? Is to just like hold the tray for Cliff?
Because he's like the computer guy, so like Cliff like goes out and actually physically does it, whereas he's more in charge of the buttons.
Because basically if there's anything that needs to be done externally on the ship, Cliff kind of has to you know, strip down, put on a proper astronaut's outfit and go outside the ship and repair it. And kind of, we see it early on in the episode that when they do that, it's a very robotic kind of formulaic process where he puts all of his possessions like watch and jewelry and including the fob to the replica on this tray. And kind of when he does it, it's like, you could just feel the weight of it hitting the tray where like both people kind of knew that it was a bad idea, but there was nothing they could do about it in the situation that David had created. And then kind of, but I don't know about you. Like, I didn't have in my head what went down. Like, I didn't know what was going to happen.
No.
I was like, what's that dickhead doing? Why is he going back? Is he going to like try to declare his love or something? Like, what's he doing? And then like when they have that face-to-face confrontation and he pulls the fucking fob out of his pocket and looks at him, Cliff, like I knew the second that Cliff knew, and Cliff knew before he went back into the machine. Like the second Cliff looked in David's eyes, I saw in David's eyes what Cliff did. Where I was like, oh no, why did he do that? I was like, please no. And like and the way that scene unfolded when he kind of wakes up and you just see the blood splatter on him instantly, and I just it sent a chill down my whole body and I felt sick to my stomach, and I didn't want to see it unfold. And like, you don't fully see it, which I kind of appreciate because I feel like it would have been too much. Like, what I saw was enough to make me feel sick. And then the episode for me kind of I wanted them to, because they sit, you know, Cliff comes back to David and they kind of just sit down at the table almost to be like, you know, David's like, well, now you know how I feel, like, now what? Like, and I just had that realization of like, fuck, like, if he wants to live, he needs to work with David now for years, or does he just kill him? Like, does he kill himself? Like, what does he do? And like, I wanted like a few more minutes of then unpacking what the hell had happened, and the episode just ended. But when it ended, like, I almost wanted to hit play again. Like, I just didn't know what to do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I was in this moment where I was like, I'm not ready to not think about this.
Yeah.
Like, it was special for me, this episode, for sure.
Yeah, the way this transpires from the moment we get to David sending out Cliff on the fake mission. Like, yeah, for me, my brain immediately went to what I think Charlie was wanting me to go to, with it being a fake out, which was he's going to send him out to die in space and just launch him away. And yeah, then he's going to get in that pod and, yeah, he's going to steal his identity.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I thought was going to happen. I was like, oh my God, that's so unbelievably twisted and fucked up and Black Mirror, where it's like, not only have I killed you, but I'm now stealing your identity and stealing your family. And how long he would keep up that ruse for, who knows, for years. Like, you know, I think that's more of like, you don't need to see that, because the second he'd have got into that body, it's all presumed. And it would have just been, I'm in your body. He would have awoken to the family, and then we'd have seen the real Cliff just like screaming in space as he loses. Exactly.
David would have been like with his family, maybe like putting his arm around Cliff's son.
Yeah.
And almost like doing that with a grin. And then it would have
like looking out into the forest, touching them both.
Yeah, then it would have just cut to Cliff, like banging on the door, screaming, and the episode ends. Like that is the ending. And then, but Charlie decided to fuck with this. Like, that's a horrific ending.
Yeah, that's a horrific ending. And that's really what I thought was going to happen. And I was like, oh, that's so twisted and so awesome. So then when he let him back in, I couldn't believe it. Where that was such an unbelievable swerve in a way that I haven't seen for so long, where the second he let them in, I was like, oh, I don't have a clue how this is going to end now, because the my perfect ending that I've just scoped out is just been completely thrown away. And I think that was all intentional from Charlie, where he wanted you to think that was going to be the ending. And so, yeah, the second he's let in, I'm not thinking about anything that could have transpired. So the moment he then is like, where's my fob? I was like, oh shit. Like, I didn't even think about the possibility that he's just quickly gone in his body. So then when he is like rushing, I'm in the mindset where I didn't have a clue what he'd done. I was like, what could he have done? Why did he want to go there? Like, cause I know he said he wanted to apologize. But for me, it hadn't, yeah, for me, it hadn't clicked at all, where I was like, I don't know where this is going. And so, like, I was so, it was like him rushing to the pod. I was eager in anticipation because I just wanted to see. And so the second it clicks over and he is covered in his blood, that was when it dropped for me. And I was just like, that's absolutely insane on so many levels. You know, not only is the family died, but like what they experienced was their loved one, you know, killing them.
And not only that, super quick. It wasn't like he grabbed them and like tied them up. He like murdered them in the space of like 2 minutes. Like he just ran down with a fucking axe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it would have been.
Yeah, there was nothing to do with it where no, like, I'm sorry or even explain anything. It is purely just speed based because, he had to get out.
Back up to the ship. Yeah.
And so that's what I couldn't believe it. And so then, when you see kind of Cliff breaking down and screaming, I thought it was just going to end there. And so then seeing him go back on the. On the space station or the ship or whatever, I was like, oh, this is still going. So then for it to just be the him kicking out the chair and looking at him and then it ends, I was a little bit like, oh, now it feels too abrupt, where if you'd have ended this like 2 minutes before, it would have been okay. But because you've given me the tease, now I did want to see what was going to happen. And I totally get it because it's what you perfectly nailed out all of the different scenarios that could happen after that. And the kind of morality of the situation of like, oh, yeah, well, we're even. But it's like, well, we're not really even because yours was a horrific,
It was nothing to do with me.
Exactly. It had nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
Whereas I reached out to you and I offered you, this portal to Earth and this to humanity. I offered up my family as friendship and all of these different things. And this is how you repay me. So it's like, I get it because I don't really know what they could show. They're not going to suddenly show them have like a fist fight to the death. That would just be awkward. And like I say, I think it would be more of a long term thing that he probably would have sat down and tried to figure it out. I don't think he would have made a rash decision with the person he is either. I think he would have been in shock and mourning for a little while, and I do think at a certain point he probably would have just took that spacesuit out and just gone out into the open area and been like, I'm taking my own life and luckily I'm taking his with me. But I don't think that would have had the same impact. So it makes sense, even though I think at the moment I felt like it was a bit too abrupt. Well, the second it said, like, directed by and written by, I was like, oh, I want more,
I did and I didn't. Like, I would, because I always like to have a nice bow tied into it, but I feel like it would have been incredibly hard to articulate it, and I think exactly what you said there is how it happens in my mind, that Cliff, being the kind of level-headed person he is, would have realized the best way to get to David is to completely isolate him. He wouldn't have killed him. He would have killed himself. And how he would have done that, I don't know. But then he would have left David there on his own to then slowly die or have to kill himself.
Yeah.
And it's just such a dark episode, man. Like, it really is. Like, it's, like I said, it really left an impact on me. It's one that, as we've kind of spoken about I think each episode has gotten better so far. And I absolutely, can't say really anything bad about this one.
Yeah, I thought this was phenomenal, and I think it combines a lot of classic Black Mirror elements whilst also being its completely fresh and original thing. I think that it's absolutely the acting standpoint of the entire season, having now seen all episodes. I think those three lead performances, obviously with Kate Mara as well as the two leads, exceptional. And I think from a sort of almost a recognition standpoint, this is the one you put forward, I think, where this is the one that kind of represents Black Mirror to a wider audience the best way. I think, even not just because of how good it is, but I think this should have been the first episode, because whilst I think this and Joan is Awful are the two that are the most familiar of Black Mirror, think this is clearly a lot better anyway, which would help. But I also think it just feels like the return, like after 4 years away, it needed to feel like Black Mirror. Yeah,
to punch you in the face, which is what this does. Like, Joan is Awful doesn't punch you in the face, like.
No, like, because it's the long epic as well, where it's the longest episode, and maybe that's why they didn't want to go with the longest one. But for me, it was the one that felt the most Black Mirror. But then, it was like, oh, we're back with a vengeance and we're here for a reason, you know? And it's like, we're still giving you these morality with tech and all this and that. So yeah, it would have been great if they'd opened with it. Obviously it doesn't matter at the end of the day, but this is such a phenomenal episode. And I think, like you say, it's kind of easy to forget that we had Lock Henry just before this, which was so amazing as well. So I think, you know, I was pretty lukewarm on the first one, and I'd kind of assumed, I even said last week, and I'm so glad I had that on the record now, before I'd even seen the rest, was like, just based upon the synopsises, I thought Joan is Awful would be my least favorite, and it did end up being my least favorite by a considerable measure as well, and I'm so glad, because I still think the episode's good, you know, so that's the lower standard, and it's only up from there. But yeah, kind of, it does feel wrong moving on from this episode because there's just so much to talk about. Yeah, and I don't think there is as much to talk about, not in terms of just the quality, but just that is the one in terms of the morality, in terms of the character work and everything. Like, you could literally talk about it for so, so long.
Yeah, this is the one that, like, if people haven't seen, like, Black Mirror and they're like, oh, there's a new season, I could just be like, yeah, do you know what, it's anthology. You don't have to start from season one. Just watch episode 3 of the new season and see what you think.
Yeah,
you know, I completely watch agree. That as a movie. You know, you like Breaking Bad. Cool, yeah, watch that. Like, you know, and then go from there. Absolutely.
It might be the best film I've seen this year, in all honesty. Like, if you consider it in that capacity, like, it's really crazy. And we'll kind of get to, obviously, just how insane this year for TV has been at the end. But let's move on to episode 4, Maisie Day. Which, yeah, this was along with the first one, was the kind of ones that I was least excited for, even though it did turn out to be, you know, very different to the synopsis, which I think was great. We kind of knew that it was this paparazzi-based episode. I think one thing that's really interesting is, like, because a lot of these are set in specific time periods. You know, the first episode, the first two, in fact, they basically feel like now, you know, they feel like 2023. Whereas specifically these other three aren't. And this one's weird because the other two feel like they have a reason to be set in the era that they're set in.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, you know, it has, like, right, the first the first scene has, like, talking about Tom Cruise's daughter Siri being born. And it has all this, like, early 2000s pop throughout the episode. And so it's very rooting it in the sort of early to mid 2000s. And having now seen the episode, I don't really see the point of it.
I don't know whether it just wanted to specifically talk about the paparazzi at that point.
Yeah, because, like, that's what I was thinking.
You know, because I think with the English press, I don't feel like there's been, like, a huge, like, change, that it's just been as shit the whole time. But, like, I don't know whether, like, in America, maybe this was more of the heyday and, like, it has calmed down a bit or something.
Because TMZ is still massive.
I wouldn't have thought so either, but it just felt like this, or maybe it is just because without the internet and everything else, it's more of, like, the paparazzi having to get leads and find leads and find
people, as
opposed to, like, now, yeah, like, TMZ just breaks on the internet instantly, you know.
Well, also, and I might say that I think you make a really good point there, is that this is about paparazzis using leads, because there's, like, a bounty on a specific photo. Yeah. Whereas nowadays, someone would have seen an image of Maisie Day, they would have posted it on TikTok or whatever, and then it'd just be all over the internet, and that person who got it would have just been anonymous.
That delivery person would have just taken a selfie, like, just for banter, and then it'd been like, oh, Maisie's there, like, okay, cool.
So I think that's why, like I say, it's just a weird reasoning of perfectly rooting this in a time and a place. Because again, much like the last episode, my brain was immediately thinking, okay, what was the major celebrity events? Because I immediately went to, like, Britney Spears, where I was like, oh, she had her sort of big episode around this time. And I was like, oh, is it going to have something to say about that? But then, yeah, it just ended up being so unimportant in the grand scheme of things.
But it's funny, really, when it kind of gets broken down. But yeah, basically we have our kind of, again, two leads and kind of two parallel stories that then cross paths, where we have Maisie Day, the kind of, you know, episode name, this actress who, where is she? She's,
oh God, I can't remember. Someone in Europe.
Somewhere in Scandinavian, I think.
Yeah. Czech Republic, apparently.
Oh, okay. And she's filming a movie and kind of, has a night where she's kind of, taken some mushrooms, gotten drunk in her room, and goes out for a joyride, which is never a good idea, and hits the old "I know what you did last summer" kind of runs someone over, and kind of is dealing with the consequence of that, and kind of gets publicly dropped from her movie because of the way she acts post this accident, and then goes into kind of hiding as well. And at the same time, we get, is it Bo? Who is this kind of photographer, freelance photographer, who is kind of takes this photo that ends up causing the celebrity to commit suicide. And she is dealing with the post kind of, you know, traumatic effects of, you know, being the catalyst for this person's suicide, but also being broke and just having no money, and kind of, you know, this Maisie Day kind of bounty that gets put on this photograph becomes so large that Bo kind of gets sucked back into that world begrudgingly, and kind of starts to try to chase down Maisie, as Maisie kind of seemingly is trying to go through rehab to get over her drug addiction, and kind of, I guess at some point we'll go into the final act, but you know, that is the kind of big chunk of the episode. And I think for me, like, before we get to the twist, because the twist is gnarly, like when we actually get to the final parts, but like I was reasonably into it. Like, it was one where I was like, I didn't necessarily feel like I was watching a Black Mirror episode. Like, with this one, I just kind of felt like, oh, okay, I'm enjoying kind of Bo and like her conflict, and like this photograph that she took, like, again, that like hit me like, man, that's rough. Like, you know, she just took a photo. She didn't realize that she broke someone, and like her dealing with that, and like that. And I like that message on, you know, putting that on the paparazzi, being like, you know, you don't realize that just one photo can cause someone to really go to that extreme. And like that message I thought was really, you know, important for them to try to touch upon. And then and I was way less interested in the Maisie stuff. That just felt way more like just a generic celebrity, you know, going off the rails, which just didn't really interest me. And I think kind of, you know, getting to the twist, it makes sense why that felt so vanilla and kind of generic, because it was obviously, you know, a precursor for something else. But yeah, like I was into it, but not, you know, after the last episode, you know, not nowhere near as blown away. But what about you with the kind of, you know, up until the kind of final act reveal?
Well, it's really interesting because I was so enamored with the episode because I knew that something was up, and I knew that, like, the moment she does this kind of hit and run, and at no point do they ever show it. And then that's the crux, is she's then gone missing to this rehab, and then we've just got this pap who's trying to get a photo of her, where I was like, this is so boring and so uninteresting and so on Black Mirror, where I was like, it's so clearly something crazy is going to happen. So I was so enamored with it because I was dying to know, where I was like, this was me going full tinfoil hat from like the entire episode. I was analyzing to the point where when she's in the diner and she's talking about the pie, and we see like the chef for like a second, I rewatched that scene like four times because I was like, what is, like, I was like, something's gotta be going on here, because the whole thing was so basic in the way it was being portrayed. And I ended up loving this so much because this was the one episode when all of my crazy theories finally worked. Where, like, I remember watching San Junipero the first time, and I remember early on throwing out the idea of vampires, because they were like in, especially there's a Lost Boys poster right at the start of the episode. But then the fact that they have, like, to go at a specific time. And then they're like, oh, we go to the CD nightclub and all this stuff. I was like, they're the fucking vampires. Yeah. Like, it was so funny that it just had nothing to do with that. And then it ended up just being like, oh yeah, it's your consciousness, just like every other episode at the time. And whereas, so this was the episode, no, it's the best one. But like, so this was the one where I was throwing out so much mental shit. Was like, something happened that night. And then the second she got put in I don't know why, but my brain was in the werewolf realm. And I don't know if there's like clues that I weren't picking up on, or sorry, like, clues that I was like, picking up on that I just can't verbalize right now. But for some unknown reason, my brain was in the she's a monster realm, and I went to werewolves. And then, so it wasn't, so then the second we see her chained up, I immediately knew it was werewolves, where I was like, oh my God, it's going to be werewolves. It's going to be werewolves. And then still waiting, and when they're like checking her and taking photos of everything, just the way she's locked up in this giant place as well, I was like, oh, it's so clearly going to be a monster thing, which is hilarious because it makes no sense. And I do think the magic of this episode is how crazy that reveal is. The fact that there isn't a fake out, which I loved, like even after the werewolf reveal, I was expecting some sort of fake out.
Yeah.
Of, especially after Jonah's awful, like that put me on the back foot for the rest of the season because they
being like, oh, this is actually a movie or something.
Yeah. So I was already like, until the episode's over, and it's a bit of a shame, but I had this feeling throughout the rest of them where I was like, until the second I see the credits roll, I don't know what's real or not anymore. Because I'm always expecting that pull away. And so, true. So it was like a case of, you know, getting all the fun werewolf action stuff, which I know we're kind of jumping around and we want to go back to the start, but like, it's just part of how I feel is that, yeah, I was waiting for a fake out, which didn't come. So then the fact that it was a crazy idea that they finally committed to, like on paper, the idea of just, oh, it's a Black Mirror episode that's about a werewolf. That's preposterous, but it was so entertaining, and I was so happy that I called it as well. So I think this episode to me was an absolute blast, but I think it has almost no rewatchability. I actually think I'll probably never rewatch this because I think my entire enjoyment of this episode was based around just wanting to know what was going on. Mm. And then getting the reveal, it being exactly what I wanted and it being entertaining. But I think if I watch this again, I just don't think it'd be interesting because, yeah, the paparazzi stuff early on, like, I hate paparazzi with a passion. Mm. And so, yeah, seeing it and seeing the stark realities of what they do, and I'm being like, yep, I'm glad they're portraying them as the scum they are. But then kind of seeing her later on and her having, like, a moral compass and being like, look, I'm a real person, I'm struggling, and I have no other option. I have to take this photo of Maisie Day to survive. I was like, really? I just didn't like her. And I don't know if that was as intentional or not, but like, I think that was just ingrained into me to not like her because of her profession. So like, I could see where they were going, where they were trying to, I think this was Charlie's way of being like, look, I know a lot of people are going to hate her, so I'm trying to justify, I want my, like, the story makes perfect sense, you know, of why someone's trying to track down a celebrity and then they have this secret. And it's like, well, that makes sense to be a paparazzi. But I almost feel like he knew that that has such negative connotations. Well,
he knew that at a point in the episode towards the end, the werewolf would be killing a fuck ton of paparazzi that we don't like, and we need to be rooting for someone to live.
Yeah.
So he had to make Bo very likable and very vulnerable and very final girl, because if not, like, we would have just wanted Maisie to just tear everyone to bits.
That was another thing as well that for some reason put me on the right path, which was when those other paps join, I immediately said out loud, oh great, we've got more cannon fodder for the monster now. Like, I just knew it immediately, where I was like, oh, these people are all gonna get massacred and it's gonna be brilliant. Like, so that was so funny to me as well. But yeah, What did you make of it, like, overall, again, like, I guess, like, even, you know, early and then obviously with the reveal? Because, yeah, did you have a suspicion that this was going to be, like, the one that broke the mold like I did?
Well, I put myself in a weird situation when I watched this because I literally almost let it just roll straight from Beyond the Sea. Like, I took almost no gap between the two episodes because... Right. I was so excited. Like I said, when Beyond the Sea kind of credits rolled, I was so, like, in it. And I was like, do I watch it again? And I'm like, I can't watch it again. And I'm like, oh, fuck, I have two more Black Mirror episodes to watch. I'm just going to fucking watch the next one. And I watched it straight away. And so probably, like, for a chunk of this episode, I was still thinking about Beyond the Sea, I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. And so I pretty much just went along for the journey. And I didn't have my hat on at all. I was just kind of watching it. And that was why, like I said, it didn't feel like a Black Mirror episode for me for, like, a chunk of it, because it isn't.
Yeah.
It is just a very vanilla paparazzi story with, like I said, I liked the fact that the paparazzi were displayed as scumbags. And like, apart from Maisie, apart from Bo, like, all of them being... you know, just like horrific, trying to get a rise out of, you know, we see him like with this celebrity where they're just trying to get a rise out of them and then like celebrating because they've got like a photo of them looking bad. And I was like, oh God, they're just so awful. But when they got to like this kind of care home, you know, rehab home, and it was like Fort Knox, and then the other guys rocked up, I was definitely then like, oh, we just got a body count. I was like, oh, okay, what is going on? Because I didn't know whether it was going to be. I never kept going back to Maisie in the accident, because Maisie was so pedestrian for me in the episode. So I never, the second she kind of left the country where the hit and run happened, I kind of was like, just forgotten about it, because I didn't feel like we were going to get a resolution on it. And so, I was still kind of guessing. And then, yeah, when she was tied to the bed, I was like, oh shit. Like they jumped straight to poor Maisie, let's save her. And then I was that second, like, please don't untie her. Like, this is not going to end well for everyone. She's tied up for a reason. Mm. Like, and yeah, I think the werewolf stuff was then good. Like, it was fun. Like, I think we got a really nice transformation. We got some good kills. I think all the stuff in the diner was good. I think it was a bit convenient how kind of Bo ended up like getting the kill, and then kind of, you know, that felt very clean to me. You know, it didn't make sense that Maisie had kind of just, you know, it's the whole final girl syndrome, but it, you know, the killer is invincible until they're not. And the werewolf was very much like that, where it was just like, it tore everyone up instantly. And then Bo just got the shot away. I enjoyed then, like, you know, those final moments where it's like, does she give Maisie her, you know, her privacy, or does she take the photo that's probably worth millions of dollars? And of course she takes the fucking photo. And I did enjoy that a lot, because I think, as we said, like, Bo was kind of, you know, being shown as like this, oh, they're not all bad. And I like the fact that the episode ended with like, nah, they're all bad.
Yeah.
So I did. Yeah. Like, I did enjoy this one, but I think like, I almost like when I rolled credits on this one, I was almost like, I've kind of done it a disservice doing it back to back with Beyond the Sea.
Yeah, I could definitely see that, because it's so different as well.
I did enjoy it for sure.
Like, I really liked the werewolf action, definitely, like you said, in the finale. I think this was just this is the lightest episode by far.
Yeah,
like, it's the least going on in terms of morality and ethics and even tech and stuff like that. And I think it's so simple, but it's a very enjoyable one. And like I said earlier, I think for me this was a blast. I think I got, in some ways, I did get lucky, just because I was vibing with this at the right time. And for some reason, I'd earmarked this as being the one that was going to be weird. So I think for a lot of people, it wouldn't have landed as well. I don't want to take my experience away from myself by rewatching this, because I could just see it being a different time and a place, and knowing what the twist is, and not necessarily being like enamored with guessing it right, that I just don't think I didn't like it much. So I think this is one that I enjoyed this better than what it actually is. And I agree with you with the ending, that this is just such a simple ending. Yeah. Let's put a bow on it and tie it together. It's funny, because it's almost the opposite of what we discussed with Locke Henry, where like, I think the way that ended with like his family and the girlfriend and everything was like, they went pure for realism and not like an action movie ending. Whereas this is just a straight up action movie ending of like, of course the lead gets the kill off, like you say, and of course she gets the money shot to perfectly end the movie. And it's like, yeah, it was fun. I also think as well, like, it's so good that this is the shortest episode. Because if this is longer, this wouldn't have worked for me. And so like, I'm so thankful that I think in general they pretty much nailed the run times in terms of like which ones were long and which ones were short, and I'm glad this is one of the shorter ones.
Yeah, we'll get there with that. But I think with Maisie, I think for me, this you know, the Lock Henry and Beyond the Sea are far and away above this one.
Oh yeah,
this
no
one,
question.
This one is much closer to Joan, where I'm like, it's better, but it's not far superior.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. Where like my feelings on it are vastly different, but I'm aware that it's not. If I was looking at it critically, there's definitely more to talk about. You know, we already just talked about like the deep fake AI stuff in Joan, which is such a small part of that episode. Let alone the morality stuff. Whereas with this, it's like the paparazzi conversation I find boring because I just don't think there's any morality there. Like they try and bring up like as I said, and I've already kind of denounced them trying to add morality to Bo, and I say no to that immediately, where I'm like, no, there's always a choice. Like, no one's forcing you to do this horrible job. Like, stop.
I feel like it's more just putting a spotlight on it, really. Like, I was glad that they didn't sugarcoat it.
Yeah.
And just be like, no, like, the pictures you take have consequence. And, like, and that is kind of, like, the overall arc of the episode, because even at the end, it's like, you know, that picture she took is gonna give her millions and just make Maisie, you know, this monster.
Yeah.
I did at least enjoy that they went hard on it, but it's not a deep conversation to have because it's a very easy one where it's just like, yeah, they're scumbags.
Yeah, it's a fun throwaway one where I think if you had to cut one, it would probably be this just because it has the less substance. Yeah. Whereas I'm glad it's here because I had such, like I said, I can't understate how much fun I had watching this. And certainly from the moment where I was like, it's going to be the thing, and then it was the thing, I was like giddy with excitement. I was like dancing in my seat where I was like, I can't believe it. And I was like, please don't let there be a fake out. That was the only thing that was stopping me from having the best time. Where I was like, please, Charlie, just commit. Yeah, I was like, please let this just be werewolves. And I called it, and it was. And I was like, that's mental that they did this. So like, even look back on it now, I'm like, oh, this is the episode that kind of breaks the structure in a completely way, which I think this episode paves the way for like way better episodes in the future.
I agree as a
conclusion after the last one. But let's talk about it. Sadly, the last episode. Plenty to talk about with Demon 79, which is obviously another one set in a certain time period. This one being set in 1979 in England. I think it's worth noting with the kind of five that. There's two that have a very British angle, obviously this and Locke Henry. You then have the two very Americanized, American-centric storylines with Joan is Awful and Maisie Day. And then for me, Beyond the Sea, I think is like agnostic, where yes, it is clearly set with Americans in the States. And I know that like you could argue that in that time period, NASA and stuff, but to me, that's more of just a human story. I don't think it really matters where that story's set. I think it's just more about what people experience, whereas I do think the other four are specific lenses to the time and place that they're set in.
I mean certainly the location is way more centric, especially you know the two in England, very much so. The location is in the title of one of them and the year is in the other one. It's very much meant to be, you know, in those specific the location is a huge part of the story.
I feel like that is Charlie's response as well, where like that was one of the few criticisms of Black Mirror post the Netflix, was kind of like, oh, it's too American. So I think he's, and that's why I think with the five and splitting it the way I have split it, I think he got the perfect balance. So I think it's great.
Yeah, I think, I haven't got a problem with the balance. But yeah, this one, set in kind of Northern England, 1979, we kind of... we meet Nida, is it? I think our lead, who is this kind of sales assistant in this shopping mall, kind of specifically working in this high end kind of shoe shop, and we kind of join her where she's I'm already thinking about when I actually get into the plot of what the hell's going on. I'm like, this episode, man, is crazy. So she is working in this shoe shop, and she's basically just got this very, formulaic life, doing the same thing every day. She works with the same horrific coworker, who's just like this girl that's just awful to her and not a friend in any way, and just all of the customers seem to be stuck up people who kind of treat her like shit. And she has these little fantasies where we kind of see her, we see the fantasy of her like basically murdering either the coworker or some of the customers, and then kind of we flash back and we see that it was just in her head and she's just mundanely continuing her job. This is until she's kind of sent down into the basement to eat her lunch because the co-worker complained about the lunches she eats and how much they stink. So she gets banished to the basement and discovers what would you call it? A little talisman. I mean, it's almost like a little domino, kind of tablet, and in this kind of old desk that she has, and kind of, you know, she's flicking through these newspaper articles of these kind of murders and mysteries that were going on, and kind of cuts her finger, and then conveniently kind of Book of the Dead style-y kind of finds this talisman and kind of accidentally bleeds on it, as we all do. You know, it's just so easily done, isn't it? And I think before we even get into like beyond that, this episode really does set up kind of, I think, tonally with the splash card of the episode and the kind of music that's used for that, and then kind of the visions of her killing her, you know, the coworker and stuff like that. I think it really does set up that this is a zany episode and kind of a little bit over the top, and then kind of, yeah, she pockets the little kind of domino and goes home with it. And then that evening, it starts to talk to her. And that, that just, like, it instantly, the voice and just the way, the humor that's involved instantly just made me start to laugh, like, in this episode, where I was like, it's so quiet as well. Where I had to turn up my TV loads, and I was like, did that little fucking thing just start talking? I was like, is that a voice? And then, like, she chucks it, and it's all muffled because it's face down. And then when she picks it up, the voice becomes, you know, louder. And basically, I guess, like, I don't know what to describe him. Like, a fucked up genie, hell's assistant, like the devil's assistant, wannabe assistant. Like, this, what the hell does she call him? Garp or something. Gorp?
Yeah, Garp. What does
she call it? Garp. Yeah, basically this, you know, let's call him, you know, a devil's version of genie appears and basically says, you have 3 days to kill 3 people. And if you don't kill one person each day for the next 3 days, the apocalypse is going to come and the whole world is going to burn. And he kind of can show her, he shows her in a vision, you know, what that will look like. Hilariously as well, he arrives in his true demonic form when he first kind of appears to her, and then decides to tap into her mind and kind of find a figure that she would find more pleasing. So he becomes one of the pop stars that was on Top of the Pops that she was watching. So he's wearing this just hilarious kind of 70s glam rock outfit for the whole episode, which just, you know, it never, like, his interactions never kind of failed to put a smile on my face throughout the whole episode. And yeah, we kind of instantly kind of get on this journey then of her having to do these 3 kills and kind of not coming to terms with it, kind of almost bundling the first kill. You know, she basically is running away from Gorp when she ends up at the kind of riverbank, and kind of this dog walker is there on his own, and kind of Gorp basically shows her visions of these people and kind of what they do, and basically he's trying to show her that they are bad people and therefore helping her rationalize killing them, and does so with great effect in this scene. And kind of, yeah, the rest of the episode is her getting the, you know, trying to get the remaining kills, and coming to, you know, not ever being on board for most of the episode, but kind of, you know, going along for the ride, being pushed by this mad genie the whole time. Yeah, I mean, what did you think of this one?
Yeah, this is an insane episode. Like, absolutely crazy. Even coming off the back of the last one.
I felt like I was insane just given that synopsis. I've got to be honest with you. Yeah, like, I haven't got any drink on me, and I felt like I was getting more and more drunk the more I was synopsizing it.
Yeah, I mean, we spoke about it last week, and it's worth mentioning again that, like, what Charlie was saying about the season prior to its release, and how obviously why he hadn't done Black Mirror for 4 years and wanting to really break the mold. And with these last two episodes, it's almost unfathomable that these are Black Mirror episodes. Yeah. And I just don't ever go online anymore, so I'd have no idea what the general reception is. And I'd love to see if it's kind of what I would guess is that it would have to be mixed, because it's not normal Black Mirror. So I think inevitably that is going to annoy some people, and that's fair if you want them to do the same thing. But I consider myself one of the biggest Black Mirror fans, and have been since day one. And I love how crazy he's got with it. And so to see where this is now going, and I think what it brings up, you know, possibilities of the future, I think is insane. And I think it's worth mentioning before I then get into my thoughts on this one, is like, the way this is presented is interesting, because it kind of has like the splash card and the, you know, the name of the film and stuff, but it's called a Red Mirror film. And kind of has on the poster like Red Mirror Presents. And when you go into it, it says on the Wikipedia that like Red Mirror is a new label, which means that it contains supernatural elements rather than technology based stories.
Right.
And
okay.
Then kind of as part of the write-in, it says that Charlie initially conceived this as part of a companion series called Red Mirror.
Right, okay.
But then he ended up including this in this new season of Black Mirror. And so that to me is fascinating. You know, are we going to live in a world where he alternates between the two every, you know, 4 years or whatever, and he has a more horror focused TV show, which sounds like my dream come true.
Yeah.
But also it's kind
of season was.
Yeah, that's my next point, is kind of that's what the season was, but also the last episode had supernatural elements and wasn't a technology based story, yet that was not under this new label. And I wonder if that is purely because of the fact that he wanted to catch you off guard. I think the whole point of Maisie Day is that no one's expecting it to be a werewolf story. And so I think if he presented this as, it's a new horror show I have, and one of the horror episodes is about a werewolf, that is nowhere near as interesting or exciting. So I almost feel like he is caught between a rock and a hard place. I get why it's done this way, but it's weird for this to be the last episode and arguably have, you know, less or even the same supernatural elements than the last one, where it's almost like, hey, this is the one where we break the mold. And it's like, but you just broke the mold in the last episode. So yeah, there is like a weird confusion there, but I do think it's super exciting, and we can kind of touch upon that afterwards.
I think it's fascinating because the last episode broke the mold for sure, whereas this one does feel more Black Mirror-y, you know, because when we get into the you know, when we get later into it, and basically she is getting these visions of all the different potential victims, or, you know, the bloke that she kills, the little girl comes in to get shoes for the funeral. And then, like, you know, she now gets told that she's changed her life. You know, she was going to commit suicide at 29. And he's like, now at 29, she's a mum and she's going to be a nan, and, you know, in the future, and she's going to have this great life. And like, you've given her that. And like, that's Black Mirror. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, that kind of, you know, sliding doors effect that we're getting in this episode, I think is so good. And how our, like, kind of lead starts to realize, not only do I need to kill three people because I need to prevent the apocalypse, but can I actually kill, like, you know, how much good can I create by killing some real, like, pieces of shit as well? So, you know, I really enjoyed, you know, that level of Black Mirror that was hidden in this supernatural episode.
I completely agree. And I also think this episode delivered what was missing in the first episode for me, which was the fun factor, because I didn't find kind of Joan and Salma as like a duo funny.
And no, whereas that's what they were hilarious. Going for.
Yeah. And it was interesting because when this starts and it's presented in like a grindhouse style, I really wanted it to be this super dark horror story. And it ends up obviously having a bunch of really good horror in it. But then when we get her with the talisman, and when she has that initial conversation, I was really worried, because I was like, okay, we're doing comedy. Comedy didn't work for me in the rest of the season. And I didn't really like that initial interaction when he kind of takes the form and stuff. Yeah, like I wasn't on board with it. And I was like, oh no, like if I don't find this funny, I don't think I'm going to find this enjoyable. And then luckily, the next scene after that, they're in the shoe store, and it becomes hilarious to me immediately when he's like sniffing the old woman, and he's like, oh, I can smell the death on her. She's dreaming for it anyway, and I got the character in that moment, and from that point on, I thought they were hilarious together. And there's so many good bits, like when he has the line of the entire season when he's in Keith's house and he's like, it looks like he wipes his ass with his house. Like, that floored me, that line. It was so fucking good and so spot on and perfect, the delivery.
There was a little bit later as well when Keith's gone into the bathroom to wash himself, and he's just like, doesn't say anything for ages, and he's staring at her, and he's just like, you're not going to fuck him, are you? And she's like, no. And he's like, I'm just checking.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because that was the second one that killed me. But like,
the whole bit in that apartment, yeah, like, was gold.
I've got a whole note written out about Keith that we need to get to. Just their interactions, I was like, oh, thankfully it worked. And so then even though it wasn't what I wanted reading the synopsis, because I thought this was going to be a more like shut up and dance, like when it said like she has to commit horrible acts to prevent, you know, the apocalypse, yeah, or whatever, I thought it was going to be presented in a more dark,
when we got the grindhousey logo as well, I was the same.
Yeah, so yeah, then it was comedy. I had that initial disappointment, and that might have been why I just didn't find that first interaction in the house funny. Like when he's showing her the end of the world and she's kind of running around and he's doing his little quips and he's like popping up like the genie, I really didn't enjoy that. And so I was like, oh no. But luckily, from the, like I said, the shoe store onwards, it was perfect to me, and then I just got that character. I love as well the way he looks, the idea of, you know, this is a real person that Charlie's based this on, like the singer in Boney M, and the music of Boney M playing a pivotal role, and the music in general, this episode's so good. Like the continuation of Bright Eyes throughout the whole thing, like it's the music in general has been very, very good. You know, we didn't even talk about the use of Beyond the Sea and stuff, which was great, but like it was awesome. And I think that's, you can obviously ground an episode in the time period so easily with music, as what they obviously did so beautifully in San Junipero as well. But yeah, I loved it, and it was a great backdrop, let alone like we'll get to like the politics and stuff, because there is a lot going on with kind of rooting this in a very specific era of England, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
But yeah, just the those quips, and it's funny, like that, and that first kill is so convenient, it's like hilarious.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, you have to kill someone, and it has presented to you this like pedophile, and he's just on his own, and you can just kill him so easily. Like, look, there's a brick in your hand, which was cool, because like, I think it works. Like, it was fun, and it put her on the right path to where she needed to go. Because I think early on, when you're presented with the idea, you already have seen yourself the potential victims. You know, like we've already been introduced to a lot.
I wanted her to kill her coworker.
Yeah, and it's almost a shame that she's never like a proper, you know, target.
Well, I'm not going to lie. I think it's to this episode's detriment for me, because I was so obsessed with her killing her.
Yeah.
Because I hated her so much.
Yeah.
And she was so mean to her. And when the politician kind of rocks up and they get the image and he turns into like devil prime minister, like banishing everyone, I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake. And I was... It actually took me out of the episode a lot, and to the point that actually this episode overstayed its welcome for me, because from the minute that she transfixed onto him to when she was in the police cell, I didn't care for it. I didn't care for any of that stuff, because I was almost annoyed that she was going after the politician. And then, because I really wanted to kill the work colleague. And then when she ended up not killing him, I'd almost just recited to the fact that, like, oh, that's really shitty. And even if we don't get the apocalypse now, he becomes a scumbag and, like, ruins England. And I was like, oh, I just I'm unhappy with all of it. But then we get back to the police cell. Because also, what happens to Gorp? Like, he just disappears in those scenes.
Which scenes are you talking about?
When she's, like, in the car, and then, like...
She tells him to go away.
Yeah, so she just tells him to go away, and he's gone for ages.
Yeah.
And, like, the minute he's gone, I just didn't care either. So, like, it really lost me in those like, 10 minutes.
Right.
And to the point that I was like, man, like, is this going to be over? Like, come on. And then he appears back in the police station, and I had a good time ending the episode. But like, yeah, he was clearly pivotal for my enjoyment of this episode.
I can see that for sure. Like, I think it really centers around him, and it's very hard to have like a loner character on their own with no interactions with anyone. So yeah, I can totally see that, where she's just kind of going through the motions at that point, where it's almost like the plot and the funness is gone. We just need to get from A to B now, where it's like, we know who she needs to kill. Is she or isn't she going to do it? We then have like the cop side story coming into it.
Yeah. And it was just like a sleazy politician is just such a low bar.
Mm.
Like, I don't know. Like, that just felt like too generic almost. That like, oh yeah, you're going to turn out to be a prime minister that's awful. Like, I should kill you. And I was just like, oh, I don't know. Like, I almost had it because I knew that this episode was long. And she got the first two kills reasonably quick. Like, the first one happens instantly. And then, like, Keith is the banker. Like, we'll put a pin in Keith and we'll come back to him. But, like, obviously he's going to be a kill in this. And then it's like, okay, what's the third kill going to be? And in my head, I really thought it was going to be the co-worker. And I really thought it was then going to be her living with the fact that she wouldn't have even got the co-worker's, like, vision. And then after killing the co-worker, she'd have got the vision that like the co-worker was going to become Mother Teresa or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that was going to be the kicker, that the one person she wanted to kill was actually the one person that turned out that like she was going to see the error in her ways and become super good. And I wanted that to be the morality. And when it just went, oh yeah, don't kill the co-worker, there's a really shitty politician. Like I say, that just, it really like nosedived my enjoyment of this episode, like, for me, which was a shame. But it did get it back in the end. But yeah, like I said, I just thought it could have told a better story for that third kill than what they did.
Yeah, I can see that. And I think that it is weird the way the co-worker story ends, because she ends up ultimately just being the conduit to get to the politician. Mm. And that feels weird from where she's obviously first set up. But I think, I need to talk about Keith, because he's the best part of this entire episode. I think that entire section from the pub, and we always love a good pub scene, to like the conclusion of the house scene, is that whatever that like 15, 20 minutes is easily the best part of the whole episode. And
oh, for sure.
For me, it started before that, because obviously we're introduced to Keith in the shoe store, and the second I see him and I recognize that face, I have such an amazing emotional attachment to this, because for people that don't know, this actor is called Nicholas Burns, who plays Keith, and he was in a massive, well, not massive actually, but a comedy show that ran for one season called Nathan Barley, where he played the titular character, which was written by Charlie Brooker. And this was my experience. This is the entire reason why I'm a Black Mirror fan, was because I was a Nathan Barley fan, and I ended up watching Black Mirror because of that. And it's mind-blowing to me that we're now 28 episodes in to Black Mirror, and he's never crossed over until this point. It's crazy to me. And so the second I saw him, I was like, oh, like, oh wait, he's not been in it. Like, and it's crazy, because he's still in so much British stuff as well. And so to see him, I had such a huge emotional attachment anyway, but I also find him so funny and such an interesting actor that he was just brilliant playing Keith. Like, he can play creepy and play hilarious at the same time so well. So even that initial interaction when he just asked for her number was classic, and obviously we get one of her kind of cool cutaways, and it's a shame that that's something that is thrown away as well, because we only really get like two of them. Like, the one with the coworker is so good as well, when she like smashes her face in the glass. And I feel like that would have been cool, because it's like we go away from that because we go to real kills so quickly. So like, we don't really need fake cutaway kills anymore. But then to get him back in the pub, as soon as he pops up again and she's like looking at him, and it's like, oh, this is go time. Like, it's just comedy gold when he's like pissing in the street, and
oh,
and
obviously that scene, like when he started pissing, and I was just like, oh, not now, love. Like, don't do it now. Like, and then like she lingered, and I'm like, linger more around the corner. Don't you go back there? I love
all
it.
Of this.
It
like, the performance in her awkwardness, mixed with his creepiness and comedic chops, was just perfect. And then, like, say, with the genie element of him constantly just being like, "Oh, for fuck's sake, what are you doing?" Like, this is where he was, I feel like, most disappointed with her actions constantly.
Yeah, he's like, "Just kill him now. Just kill him now.
And he's like, "We can just go find someone else." And then he's like, "Oh, yeah, do it in the house. That'd be brilliant." You know, he's on his own or whatever. And then the way it's all transpiring with him putting on, like, the music and everything, it's so good. His little dance, like.
Yeah,
this whole part is just like, I need to rewatch this episode just for Keith and this entire breakdown because it's so good. I agree with you, that the side characters are definitely better than the main character in this episode. Definitely.
Oh yeah, she's not great. Well, she's so not the actress's performance isn't great. It's just that character is just not.
Yeah, like she serves her purpose, but it's similar to Charlotte Dance for me, where it's like she's just the conduit to get to more interesting side characters, and it's like they always need to show up and do their thing.
Because it is that scene when he says, like, yeah, he wiped his ass with his house, and then you see Keith look around, and it's almost like he heard him. He like looks around, and he's like, "Oh, do you want to go to the bedroom?" Like, and he's like, "I think that's a bit better."
kicking the porn away as well, right?
Yeah, and then like itching himself and being like, "I need to wash. Like, I got to wash my balls." Like,
I look because like there's been comedy obviously in it, and it's funny that we've talked about it, like with comedy not landing, for example, in the first episode. But it's similar to, like, a Jordan Peele thing, where it's easy to forget that Charlie Brooker made his name as a comedian. Like the way these two people have made careers is fascinating. In like, I've said it last week, and I stand by even more so after these episodes, is that I think Charlie Brooker is genuinely one of the greatest science fiction writers of all time. Like, no question about it. And it's like, but he was known for doing comedy in England. Yeah. And so the way he's transitioned, very similar to obviously Jordan Peele doing all comedies live, and then writing and creating one of the best horror movies of all time, too, in fact. Like, it is crazy. And so, yeah, like, I'm glad that we got to see... because like it's weird with Jordan Peele's movies, like we almost don't want them to have any sort of funny elements. And granted, you know, like Get Out had the side character that was brilliant and stuff, whereas Us was a lot more straighter for it. Whereas I'm happy that anthology can open yourself up a lot more. Like, obviously, Jordan, we're getting one film every 3 years if we're lucky. So it's like, yeah, I don't really want to see comedy from him in that capacity. Whereas with Charlie, it's like, no, like having an episode that has not only the genie, which is funny, and it's a completely different style of humor, but this Keith character, which is just pure comedy gold. And it's very like old school British sitcom comedy as well. Like, he's such a farcible, like, he's so unbelievable as a character, where he is just like, no, you just live in a comedy. He's like a Harry Enfield style character. I loved it so much. It made me so happy.
Like, how submissive he was the second he saw her with the hammer.
Yeah, that was interesting. Like, I wondered if that was going to go somewhere. Obviously, we get the kind of twist with the demon and with him kind of calling up the phone and being like, why didn't this kill count? And it's funny because... I thought of two different scenarios that ended up both not being what they went with, which was the first one was that he gave up, so it didn't count. But then the second one, which I thought would have been funnier, and I thought this was going to come back in the end, was even though he said it didn't have to be one a day, I didn't know if they were going to be hard and fast with that, because obviously the fact that
he was like, oh, you're done three.
Yeah, and so the brother comes back, and I really thought they were going to con her and be like, you know, the second he actually died, it was 11:59, so that one doesn't count. Like, I thought they were going to do something like that, but then they went the other way, which, once they justified it, I liked it. But the initial reveal when he said, like, oh, yeah, he doesn't count because he's a murderer, I was like, oh, that's so stupid. I was like, you should have just done the comedy thing with the time. But then once he was like, nah, it's because he's considered one of us, like, that doesn't count. I was like, oh, no, that's cool, actually. Like, I do like that as a reason.
Yeah, no, I liked it.
Yeah, so they made it make sense, and it was fun. Like, I love, again, like, the stupidness of it, of, like, it's already such an absurd situation that you have to kill multiple people, but now for some stupid technicality. And then I love when she throws those technicalities in his face later on as well. Yeah. Where he's like, nah, his future, he's one of our boys. Like, he's one of our favorite people in human history, what he grows up to be. Yeah. Like, and then it's like, yeah, but he hasn't killed anyone now. And it's like, you said that, right? It's like, yeah, but he bricked his dog to death as a kid. He's like, you said animals don't count. Like, I loved that whole interaction.
It was good how he didn't want to show her the future or anything. Because he's like, oh, come on, like, can't you kill that little old deer? Like, don't kill him. Like, you know, that's like killing Hitler for us.
Exactly. Like, that's exactly what it was.
Yeah, like, that was quite good. And I think as well, like, the whole kind of bundle of the fact that they got the kill by fluke, and like, and then his kind of reveal that he's like, yeah, this is my first time, like, I'm on probation, like, you know, if I don't perform well, the devil's gonna put me in permanent exile, like, you know, and, like, I really enjoyed all of that as well, because I just thought he was so funny in the whole episode.
Yeah,
and then like I really did like the fact that at the end, you know, it was just like this weird fucked up like companionship where they just go off to permanent exile together.
Yeah, I love the ending.
They're not going to be happy. They're just going to be
and I do like that, because I do think that, and maybe this is either watching too much horror stuff, so we're more kind of switched on to it than what it would be the general Black Mirror audience, or also just being in a mindset of thinking that Charlie's going to break the mold. This was another example where they did exactly what I thought they were going to do, which was that when they do the kind of the fake out ending of like when you see, you know, it's a domino. And I think that's why they have the cutaways at the start of the episode, because they're trying very hard to imply like, oh, maybe it's just crazy and none of this happened. But I was convinced it was real. I was like, no, this world is definitely ending. And so I feel like that was supposed to be a twist, but wasn't for me, because like as soon as it did end, I was like, sick. Like, I'm glad you committed to the story, you know, and you didn't do the fake out again, which I was afraid of, as I can mention.
And I feel like as well, most people would think that they're like, there's romance there and there's a happiness, whereas I don't think that at all. I think they will hate each other for eternity, but at least they're gonna have companionship.
Yeah,
you know, I think that's what they've signed up to, that like they will bicker and moan and do that for all of eternity, but that's what they've chosen to do. Like there isn't like a suddenly we've clicked thing, but I think a lot of people will get that vibe from it.
We don't have any kind of love stories, you know, in the traditional sense, like coming off of, we had San Junipero and we had Hang the DJ and these kind of very hopeful love stories, whereas any sort of relationships we had in this weren't portrayed in that aspect. So I think
the love, you know, the love story was beyond the sea, and look how that ended up,
because... the worst case scenario ever.
yeah
for sure. But I love this episode. I think what do you think overall? Obviously this is 5 episodes of the season, obviously including the 2 we talked about last week. Very different to Black Mirror, but I think for us it's especially works, because it's like, okay, it's the sci-fi show that we love that suddenly broke the mold in a more horror sense.
Yeah, I think for me, like, I've kind of, you know, I really enjoyed the season. I think, you know, Lock Henry and Beyond the Sea are the absolute standouts. You know, they are head and shoulders above the rest of the season. I think then for me, you know, Maisie Day and Demon are reasonably close to one another, where I enjoyed them both quite a bit. I think I had more fun with Demon, but it did overstay its welcome. Like I say, it did drop quite significantly for me, whereas Maisie kind of ended on a high. And then Jonah's Awful is, you know, the bottom of the pile for me. But I think, you know, that is still, like, not a bad episode. I think that's the thing. Like, we've seen so many anthology where it's like, And we've almost, because we've had so many years of doing this podcast without Black Mirror, we've almost been accepting of it, where we're like, it's okay to have a bad episode with anthology, which is true, because you can just move on to the next one. And like, as long as you have enough good, you can get away with it being, you know, we have that with anthology movies or anthology TV shows, where we can almost write off a bad one, especially if it's like a shorter one. It's like, oh, okay, fine. You know, if Maisie Day had been rubbish and we're like, oh, okay, well, that's only 43 minutes and the rest are like closer to an hour. Cool. Okay. Well, the other 4 are brilliant. But it's like, no, all 5 are really good. Like, if you were to put any of these 5 into like any recent anthology TV show, they'd be one of the best episodes of the season. And Lock Henry and Beyond the Sea would be the best episode of any season.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think, you know, that just shows the level of Black Mirror and this season for sure.
Yeah, I completely agree. I thought this season was absolutely phenomenal. I think it was the very definition of a return to form, because I think if there was ever a slight dip ever from episode 1 to now, we're 28 episodes deep now in Black Mirror, it was last season, which was a very slight decline of like it went to good. and now it's gone back up to the best. Like, this shit is so good when it's at its peak. I think overall, this there's an argument for this being the strongest overall season. I would say it's between this and season 3, which was the debut on Netflix, because obviously it had Nosedive, Playtest, San Junipero, and Shuffle Dance. And I think those four, alongside the strong four in these, are like very close, and obviously time will tell kind of what resonates more. But you absolutely nailed it with the two of, like, I'll remember Lock Henry and Beyond the Sea for an extremely long time. Okay. And then the fun factor specifically that I had with Demon and Maisie Day was so strong for me that I absolutely loved it. And this reminded me how much I love Black Mirror. Like, I was flirting with it at the start of the year. Obviously, with TV, for me, it's interesting because I'm currently towards the end of season 5 of Lost, which is my favorite TV show of all time. And I'd kind of said for a while, like, yeah, Black Mirror is probably second. And then with, obviously, Last of Us coming in. But I think I don't think I can quantify The Last of Us in terms of a TV show, because it's just an amazing adaptation of something that I already loved. And I think it's unfair.
The telling tale of
maybe that. Maybe we'd have to revisit them, but I almost feel like it's just different because I know that story. Like, I've loved Joel and Ellie for 10 years. So that's unfair to put that to two other new things that I didn't know Lost before Lost, and I didn't know Black Mirror before Black Mirror.
The problem is you've got three very different things there, because you've got Lost, which is a multi-season of the same story.
Yeah.
Awesome story, but, you know, this overall arc. You've got Black Mirror, which is just 27 different anthology episodes, you know, that arguably, you know, just, you know, how do you judge them in comparison to a traditional TV show? And then The Last of Us is, I don't think you can hold it to its detriment, because it is just this unique experience of a TV where it's like each week we were enamored with how they would adapt the show. And it was just so many questions around, you know, adaptation versus evolving versus kind of staying true, you know, and everything else. And it was just, you know, it was just incredible. And I think, you know, that is what, you know, when we talk about horror being a deep genre and how it can have these different levels to it, and it's not just like, oh, I'm running at you with a knife, you know, there's so many layers to it. And I think, like, those three TV shows show how, like, fucking vast, you know, television can be. You can't get three different experiences for us in that way.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. Like you say, it's very hard to compare them, but I think, yeah, this is just reminding me of, I've loved Black Mirror for a decade, and I have to be stronger with that. So I am confident in saying this is my second favorite show ever, because I just love Black Mirror. And even though, like I say, it is more of a collection of films than anything, and who knows, that might change in the future. Like, we'll have to see, obviously, multiple seasons. We're expecting at least two more seasons of Last of Us to tell the story that we know up until this point. But then who knows, that, you know, there's going to be potentially, hopefully, future games to adapt and stuff. So that's very much an ongoing thing. But this was exceptional. And I think that, considering we've just mentioned it there, like, I'll say it again, I think this, for me, is we're right on the bang on halfway point of the year right now. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of get a sense of what 2023 has been like. And my two favorite things of the year have been TV shows.
Yeah.
Like, no question about it. The Last of Us and Black Mirror, I like more than any other film. And it's not even close, actually, which is surprising, because I'm such a big film fan and have always been a way bigger film fan than TV. Like, I've always had that argument with people that people are like, I'm more of a TV person. I never understood that. Never in a million years. I was like, the quality of film in general is so much higher than the history of TV. But this is just a year that my tastes were catered to so beautifully with TV, and film just hasn't been that way that this year so far.
It is funny because, yeah, you know, Beyond the Sea is a great episode.
Yeah.
And it would be more interesting to put it into the film top 10 for a normal year. But for this year, yeah, like, it would be, you know, it would be up there. It would be right up there, you know. And I'm like, you know, in a normal top year 10, where would this one episode stand for me? I think it would do reasonably well. But yeah, this year it would be you know, just like, say, Head and Shoulders.
I feel like we should do it because it just feels unfair. Like, even doing what we've done, which I'm glad we've given this an episode, which is more than what we gave The Last of Us. You know, it was always like on the end of other episodes. But like, even this feels crazy. These three that we've just discussed should have been like three standalone episodes. Like, yeah, they're so good.
I nearly did. Like, when I watched Beyond the Sea, I nearly like messaged and was like, man, this needs its own episode. But the problem is, like, yeah,
you just never know until you've seen it is the problem. Because even after the last two, so I watched 3 and 4 and I was like, oh, we could easily just do 3 and 4. But the problem is, I didn't know about Demon 79 at that point. And then it's like, well, if that's rubbish and doesn't deserve a conversation,
then you got your whole episode on that. Yeah.
So it was like, you only know within the context of like, oh, we should have just done 5 episodes on all 5 of these. But yeah, you live and you learn. But yeah, this was outstanding. Like, it's, I'm going to miss it. I've had such a great time. I'm glad I've really, you know, been strong in terms of, I haven't just binged this in the first weekend. Like, I've watched these like 1 every 2 to 3 days over the last 2 weeks. And that's been such a good way of savoring the show. And I'm going to miss it, like, regardless of where we go now, if he does a sort of Red Mirror, or if he does like just maybe a one standalone episode again, I feel like that's due now. But my God, what a return to form. And he's just a reminder. It's like, in case you forgot, no, Black Mirror is the best shit. It's the best sci-fi show of all time. It's so good. And what a year for TV, man. Like, absolutely outrageous. This might be the, like, I think our best of will kind of show that is like the swing in momentum this year in terms of acting, in terms of the writing, in terms of originality and emotion and character development and all that stuff. It's really been crazy. Like, the films need to step up is all I'll say for the second half of the year.
I know they really do, because I'm not going to touch upon it now because I've not finished the finale yet, but like, in between Black Mirror these last 2 weeks, I have been nailing From. I'm on the season 2 finale now, which dropped like this week. And I've been loving it.
Nice.
And yeah, I want to see how it ends, really, to give my overall thoughts on it. But man, I've been having a real blast with it as well.
So yeah, I hope that's going to be a factor. Because yeah, I'm 100% going to watch that in the coming months as well. So yeah, that would be crazy. Well,
you need to now, because like, I'm like, it needs to be, it's in the conversation at the year end. Like,
oh yeah, I'll watch it before year end. Don't worry.
Yeah. But I'm like, you know, yeah, the TV has been so strong. And then like, yeah, just like movies in general, like there's not much that's piquing my interest. Like, I'm like, even like outside of the horror, like,
yeah,
I'm,
I was
like,
going to say that, like, in general,
with the, like, Mission Impossible coming up, and I'm like, oh, well, they're always a banger. But like, there isn't like that much. Like, I'm just not excited for Marvel right now and the slate they're putting out, you know, and it's like, I don't watch the DC stuff. Like, it's just, yeah, just movies this year aren't hitting for me.
No, this has been so quiet, like you say, outside of horror. For me, Mission Impossible is huge. It's the most excited I've been for a movie since the last Matrix film. I absolutely adore those films, and I think this one looks...
little Nolan movie as well coming up.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I'm excited for Oppenheimer. You know, his recent movies haven't landed as much as, you know, previous ones, but I've got a good feeling about this one. The cast in particular is exceptional, so I hope that one lands. But yes, aside from those two, which are obviously very soon, like, I don't think there's anything outside of horror that I'm looking forward to for the entire year now in film world. Obviously, we never have time to talk about them, but this has been probably one of the greatest years of all time for video games. Like, and at the halfway point, if you stopped it right now, this would go down in history as one of the greatest years ever. And we've still got so much insane titles to look forward to. Like, so it is wild for me that, like, video games and TV have over-delivered in a ways that I've not probably ever experienced. Video games probably was like 6 years ago in 2017 when it was this good. TV's never been this good. But yeah, film, like, it's crazy. My biggest love of all those, my biggest passion, like, really, really needs to step up. But yeah, there's plenty of time for that. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. I guess we don't really need an outro, do we? That's the that was our outro. So yeah, that's it. That's Black Mirror done and dusted. Like I say, we're returning to the cinema in a couple of weeks, so I think we've got a quiet week. We'll have to figure something out. There's a few on-demand things. There's always a Craven. There's always other stuff. So yeah, we'll figure that one out. But for now, yeah, that was episode 353. Thanks for listening, as always, and we'll see you again very soon.
See you later, everyone. Mainly because
words I never could, and how could I start that?